Acham, would you like to remind us about the reality now? Because normally we almost forget all the things we think about the story, about the person, about my work and my stressful all the times. We almost forget about the reality now. Yes. Seeing and...
Okay, but the idea of would like to understand better and more and so...
I think it's idea of self.
Yeah.
Would like
and
to...
And kusala or akusala?
I think it's akusala.
So I think that just consider just one word or one reality is much better. Accumulate right understanding more and more by thinking over about it. For example, we have heard many, many times about seeing. It's condition now. We don't have to do because there's actually no one at all. But there always is the idea of I because it has been accumulated for a long, long time ago. So it doesn't matter at all what will come next. But right understanding, begin to understand that it's useless just to try to follow in order to gain understanding. But the understanding is conditioned by hearing again and think about it wisely and then leave everything to condition. So it's impossible just to catch or to understand just one thing or one word of a reality. Just listen and leave it to anattaness because the next moment is thinking, wanting again and again, unknown all the time. Just pay attention to how can I understand better. So that is the motive of these words for understanding how. Just listen. Because you see that it's uncontrollable, but the understanding itself will begin not to want to understand this or that, but what is said now, is there any understanding, more or less? And when there is the understanding of no self, how can that be without the right awareness, which is conditioned, to begin to understand? If one is asked, how can I have the understanding of seeing right now? See, lopa is there again. So panya has to be wise to all dhammas, naturally.
Thank you, Acharya.
And sometimes you say that panya works its way,
yeah.
And that's another way of saying the same thing, that when the conditions for panya are there, it arises. Mm-hmm. And if the conditions for panya are not there, it can't arise. Anyway.
And when there is an idea of wanting to, panya can understand that moment, that it's useless to think about that.
Acharya, it would seem that when you say about the importance of understanding one word at a time and considering it, this should come together with the understanding that there is always a reality appearing.
Right. Even thinking like that, just gone. Nothing can stay. And that way is conditioned to understand. So no more question about how can I know. Please tell me in detail or please show me the words of the Buddha. Show the path already. It depends on the moment of hearing it to begin to understand, even by thinking that actually there's no one. No you at all. No matter what life, in the past or future.
But there has to be the hearing of the Dhamma properly explained in the first place. And without that, there's nothing.
Never enough.
But you mentioned that hearing Dhamma properly means that with understanding at that moment, right?
Otherwise, why do we listen?
Everyone has different accumulations and ways of thinking, and so what is properly explained for one person may not be properly explained for another. We can sit in a Dhamma discussion for a long time, but it maybe doesn't quite make sense. Another time, it makes perfect sense. These are things that are beyond control, obviously. But as Ajahn says, that's why there has to be listening again and again. And it doesn't mean we should try and listen more, because it's down to conditions, whether there's the opportunity. But when the opportunity is there, obviously pay attention.
What about understanding the words and knowing a lot, but not aware or understand reality right now? Instead of trying to have more understanding of the words, because after death it's forgotten, but the understanding is accumulated little by little, to see the advantage of understanding, not rather to understand the way one explains.
I think what Ajahn is saying is that there's no need to worry about lack of understanding, because that's just the way things are. But if there has been listening and paying attention and reflecting, then there will be more understanding, whether it can be measured in some way or not.
And this is exactly the same point that Huyen and I were discussing, because when one is so concerned that there isn't enough understanding, or there isn't any awareness, or one would like to have more understanding, it's not the understanding at this moment that seeing is conditioned, hearing is conditioned, thinking is conditioned, attachment is conditioned. It's all about I who would like this so much. So when it becomes clearer that seeing right now cannot be made to arise, and the seeing that's arisen, no one can stop it, and the same with thinking, the same with attachment, then there's the beginning to understand what is meant by dharmas are anatta. And then gradually there's less and less thought about trying to have awareness, trying to understand, trying to do something. So it has to come back to this moment.
And there can be understanding at the intellectual level that there is no understanding also. And that's different from the thinking that, oh, I don't have understanding.
But Ajahn, the ideal selves seems often jump in and want to know, want to understand more and other things. Yeah.
But if you understand, not forgetful, that actually there is no one at all, no me.
At that moment, is it thinking?
Yes.
And is thinking Dharma?
Yes.
And is it my thinking, or is it just conditioned Dharma?
Just conditioned
Dharma. So it's just thinking which can think about any kind of nonsense, but the thinking is real and it arises for a moment and it passes away. It doesn't last at all. Nothing lasts at all. So it's not a matter of not having the idea of I jumping in. It's a matter of just understanding that whatever arises is just a conditioned dharma, that's all.
Yes. And you remember that what you said in the book. Not here and now, see. But actually, it's not in the book. It's now. Each word is now.
Understanding grows, there's confidence also that the self cannot know anything.
When it arises, there is no me. Otherwise, it's I who understands.
And the minding and being so bothered about this jumping in self, what kind of reality is that? Kusala or akusala? Because of clinging so much.
And now who hears?
Only hearing.
No one.
No one, yes.
It's gone completely.
But at that time seems like a story lasts so long, long.
It does matter, because that's the way it is, to understand even at that moment as no me.
I mean, even that much is better than not, no understanding at all, right? Even at the intellectual level, no matter how weak, is useful.
And it's only when it's my story that goes on so long that it's a problem. actually it's same for everyone. Thinking thinks a lot about a lot of crazy things. So, but it's not my thinking, it's just the nature of thinking to think about anything. The variegated cheetahs that can think about anything it imagines.
And why do you think about yesterday? Yesterday.
Because Sanya remarked all the things.
Is that in the book?
No, I don't think so.
The way it is.
Yes.
No one can stop. It's arising.
Thinking is a Dharma, but the thoughts are concepts. Backtracking a little bit. For example, wrongness starts with wrong view. And during the course of the discussion, that was corrected to something in regard to hetus, something that the wrongness is... And, but I know that wrongness starts with wrong view, Diti.
So I know.
So yeah. Yes, there is that solid. But so when it gets corrected like that, there is not confusion. It's just that there's. It doesn't seem like much Dhamma there.
Always I, deeply rooted. So if there's understanding, actually there's no me at all.
Only the moment of understanding is just knows no me.
But it's yes. The understanding.
But when there's no understanding, do you think it's useful to remind oneself no me?
But what is the truth?
The truth is that any Dhamma that's appearing is...
Not me.
Yes. So is
it is the beginning. It's the beginning of
me?
Thinking about the truth. Even while one is studying the teachings. The lives, even this life and the next life, no me. This is the absolute truth. It does matter what is conditioned to arise, no me.
Trying to see the no me.
But you'd have the idea of no me little by little.
And that's wrong practice. Yeah.
Then again, when you're, you know, converse with someone, you have to say, I'm trying. Although when it really happens at that moment, the trying can be understood.
I try to avoid the word trying as much as possible.
I'm just a little bit puzzled about what moment is the no me moment.
Now.
Yeah. What?
Seeing is gone.
Right.
So, little by little, how can the understanding of no me be deeply rooted?
Hearing about Dhammas.
Only that. And?
Often.
And? Until awareness begin to realize the nature of that which appears as the self.
So actually, all Dhamma discussion is about no me.
Right.
But if no me for you and me, Kusalajita?
It used to be, but when there is understanding, it begin to understand what's meant by no me.
Can that understanding come about by no means?
So the test is now.
If there is some accumulated understanding, some background information about regarding Dhammas being all there is and they are no me, so when you hear about no me, there can be a reminder about Dhammas.
That sounds like a story. Dhammas are all there is, no me.
It will bring more understanding because Dhamma now is arisen by conditions, no matter what.
It's understanding of the Dhammas that is going to bring the understanding of no me.
Otherwise, eventually, there must be I who knows no me.
Otherwise, it's just repeating a mantra, but it has to be the actual understanding.
But when it's repeated by understanding,
it comes down to the understanding.
But the Buddha reminded his listeners again and again that what has to be understood are seeing an invisible object, hearing and sound, and so forth. The emphasis is always on what is appearing and can be understood when he was teaching.
So after hearing, after saying the words of the Buddha, what would be next?
No next, Ajahn.
Thank you.
After hearing the words of the Buddha,
a lot, understanding the words and everything, what will be next?
It has to begin now, because if one waits until one's read all the books, then one forgets about...
Even that there is the idea of self lurks. But when awareness arises, it is the beginning of understand that reality as that reality, little by little. And it will lead to no being. So there, I use the word must, but without this it's impossible. If awareness does not arise, it's impossible to understand this moment as no me. So the next is awareness, conditioned by right understanding, by conditions. So it begins to understand no me, little by little, and better, gradually. Until even right now, it's not me. And we don't have to say that, because the understanding of reality itself is there. No need to say no me.
And then less and less thought about another place, another time, another reality one would prefer to have, because it's just what is conditioned at this moment.
And without the understanding of no me, from the words of the Buddha, it's impossible to have understanding of no me at all.
And Ajahn, what about understanding of idea of self?
That Panya knows,
yes,
with awareness, because it understands that certain object which awareness is aware of.
Mm. So when there's an idea of me, there can be awareness or understanding that it's
wrong. And after that,
wrong.
I again,
yes,
and again. That's why one understands why it has to be understanding whatever is there,
yes,
by the nothingness of right awareness.
And some I is idea of self, and some I is just attachment.
Until it's completely eradicated.
Yes, but not all thoughts of I eradicated. It's the idea of self that is eradicated.
The understanding of whatever appears now by conditions. And when there is trying to, there is the understanding that is wrong, is wrong. So Panya understand what is wrong is wrong. Otherwise it cannot get away or let go the idea of self. How long will it take?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't matter.
As you've often explained, the fact that there is a lot of wrong view or other unwholesome tendencies is not to be considered something to be anything done with, because any reality can be understood as it is.
And this is the only way. I will listen and listen and listen and listen as much as there are time and conditions. Otherwise, we'll just try to listen all day. Very tiring. Because it's done by lobha. What about when one does not have the idea of trying to do this and that to understand reality? It arises by conditions. to understand better that it's conditioned. No one can make it arise at all. Until then.
If the person turned on the radio of the Thanachan all day, and at one time she can realize
the purpose of self.
Oh.
It can be wrong practice too, because they may think that anything else like going out with their friends or following one's household activities is taking away from their dharma or something, but this is wrong understanding, because it's thinking about certain activities. It's not understanding anything about realities that are conditioned now and about one's accumulations, not the natural development.
You may turn on the radio with the idea of self, but you may also turn off the radio with the idea of self.
What about understanding at no me? It hasn't come yet.
You mentioned yesterday, which reminded me, I have a question about regret that someone asked. We know regret is akusala, and there was a quote you gave about to regret that today sati didn't arise or that sati was not developed is one kind of nama. Regret is one kind of nama. However, it blocks the possibility to consider nama and rupa that is appearing due to the idea that a self that is regretting. Regretting must surely be a self. Why? Because we're not knowing the characteristics of nama or rupa which arise at that moment. Of course, regret arises with dosa, so not at the same moments, but a sotapanna, can a sotapanna regret?
Why not?
So not always wrong view of self behind it.
What about the person who has no awareness arising at all? Can there be the understanding of reality as not self?
No, and then the idea of self.
That's why
Panya,
which understands, works its way.
Yes.
Listen
more. Gradually beginning to understand whatever appears. Because yesterday Alberto mentioned that the example of, for example, when if one has done something wrong and one may, like a monk, will confess it, but even for lay people it may be helpful to mention it, even if not to another, but even to oneself. So this would be like kusala reflection that's referred to, but usually if one thinks of what has been done that is wrong, usually there would be regret. But anyway, they're just different conditioned dharmas.
That's why there can be kusala without right understanding.
Yes. And usually I think when there is a lot of regret, it's a bit like when there's a lot of planning in the future. Usually one is lost in the story and there is the idea of I can do, like I could do differently yesterday. I can make it happen in the future, not understanding that namas and rupas were conditioned then and will be conditioned in the future, no matter what plans are.
The more regret, the more expectation.
But regret, is it necessarily associated with particular kind of thinking?
What will it bring? Regret.
Some akusala done, or kusala that's not done, and
then what is moment of being regretful?
Just thinking about oneself, that one has not done something that should have been done.
So wishing one's deeds had been otherwise.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what your original question was.
What Sarah was saying, that it's usually thinking about the future, but I was wondering whether you have...
It has to be
always thinking about the future.
Regret is thinking about the past.
Right.
It's different from thinking about the future. Like thinking about the akusala that was done in the past.
Yes.
Regret is always about the past, what has been done, not done, what one would have liked to have happened. But I mentioned that it's usually with the idea of what I could have done differently, not understanding dharmas. Just like when one is planning for the future, thinking I can make this or that happen, it's also with the idea of I can make it happen.
So, regret is kusla or akusla?
Akusla. Regret is
akusla. Metta natu. Or what? When is akusla?
Better to understand.
Yeah. So, regret itself is kusla or akusla?
It's akusla.
So, one shouldn't regret?
If there are conditions, one will regret.
But we talk about the benefit of being regret. Regretful. When it's I, it doesn't bring anything. But when there's panya, it's a reality, not self. Mm-hmm. So it will not bring dukkha when it's panya. But when it's not panya, it's still I who regrets.
Oh, we're talking about another kind of regret, such as someone...
We talk about realizes. Just one reality at a time.
So regret is always akusala, always arising with dosa. So it can't arise with wrong view. But usually, often, after regret, there's the idea of I could have done, there's wrong view of self arising. But instead of wrong view of self, there can be understanding at that moment. It's just a dharma, not my regret. Right.
Myself and Alberto were talking about the Saulata Sutta, about the arrow, about regret, which is obviously shooting oneself once, but then thinking about it continually in a negative way and an unhelpful way is like shooting yourself twice. The Buddha talked about this aspect of the arrows, the akusala regret, which is like doing it again and again with
akusala. Oh, never learning from it. Yeah.
Well, no, that's right. Not having no understanding. Just thinking, oh, I wish, in a negative way. So you're actually keep on stabbing yourself again and again instead of having understanding.
But there are many degrees of kusala. Regret arises with unpleasant feeling, so it has to be a kusala. But there can be conditioned for understanding that it's a kusala. So it's not better to do it again and again. And more than that, it's not self, stage by stage. For someone, after having such idea that it's not good, if it's not understanding, it would be again and again arising.
And it seems very easy to be taken for self.
All the time.
Dosa and loka each arise with moha, ignorance. It's subsequently that the understanding happens.
There can be many, many moments of dosa, and at each of those moments, moha is there, not understanding anything, ignorant of the akusala khitas at those moments. But understanding can dart in any time, understanding the reality as it is, and then afterwards there may be more dosa, more attachment, because understanding is just for a moment. Yes.
Understanding, this is dukkha, this is suffering.
Just understanding what appears at that moment, no matter it's dosa or whatever it is. Mm. Because if one says, this is dukkha, this is suffering, it's like a story about it.
Right. Thank
you. So just understand what appears, no need to give it a name or... Because it's real at this moment. Mm. Like at this moment, if there is... dosa or attachment or boredom, it's real. So moment understanding can understand, and then more boredom, more dosa, because whatever arises is conditioned.
Actually, I'd like to think that understanding dhammas as dukkha is very high level of understanding.
Another question from Lucas. He referred to the Kalama Sutta that leads to our own welfare and happiness. And he says that's why he's seeking a result of practicing Dharma or understanding. And he wants to add Upasita observance or attending monastery festivals, which for him were always good and led to more kusala. And he says, sometimes your explanations seem to deny Tipitaka or Buddha or elders' words. I'm confused who I'm supposed to follow. I'm thinking of taking 8 precepts and spending 1 Upasita day in meditative mode. I'm seeking peace renunciation, stopping a while and taking care of what is worthy of attention. Comments, please.
Just me.
This me seems to be associated with many words without understanding.
That's why anyone who just read the Tipitaka without understanding of Paramattha Dhamma is impossible.
A very busy me too.
And a little more on the dust rag, which we were discussing the other day, and Alberta wanted to have some references. So the first one is a Dhammapada verse, like the earth, the arahat, not just one arahat. The arahat is patient and not provoked to respond in anger. Like the doorpost, he is firm. He's unperturbed by the ups and downs of life, serene and pure like a lake free from mud. For such an arahat, there would be no more rebirth. And then it actually tells the story of Sariputta, which is the same as in the Anguttara Sutta about Sariputta's lion's roar. And it's quite long. This is just a shortened version here. Just as, Lord, people throw upon the earth things clean and unclean, dung, urine, spittle, pus and blood, yet for that the earth has no revulsion, loathing or disgust towards it. Even so, Lord, do I dwell with a heart that is like the earth, vast, exalted and measureless, without hostility and without ill will. However, one in whom mindfulness directed on the body in regard to the body is not present may well hit a fellow monk and leave without an apology. The story is because another monk said bad things about Sariputta, but Sariputta forgave him and also asked him at the end to forgive him. And then it talks about water used to clean and unclean and fire and wind. And then just as a duster or dust rag wipes over things clean and unclean, things soiled with dung, urine, pus and blood, yet for that the duster has no revulsion, loathing or disgust towards it. Even so do I dwell with a heart that is like a duster. And I actually came across a small quote in the Vinaya, which is also about a dust rag. He should approach the order. This is referring to a monk who approaches the Sangha when it's been convened. He should approach the order with a humble mind, with a mind as though it were removing dust. He should be skilled about seats and skilled about sitting down. He should sit down on a suitable seat without encroaching on the space intended for monks who are elders and without keeping newly ordained monks from a seat. He should not talk in a desultory fashion nor about inferior worldly matters. Either he should speak Dharma himself or he should ask another to do so. He should not disdain the Aryan silence. So actually it comes up in different places. And finally, a quote of Ajahn's that she made when we were in India. There is conceit if we have an idea that we should be a somebody with great wisdom.
We should follow Sariputta's example, who compared himself with a dust rag, a useless rag without any value. If we do not consider ourselves somebody, but rather a nobody, it will prevent us from pretending, even to ourselves, that we are more advanced than we are in reality. We also need the perfection of truthfulness, satya, which we were talking about the other day, to keep us on the right track. We have to be sincere, truthful to reality. Do we want to avoid being aware of akusala? We have to be aware of it in order to know our true accumulations. If we're not aware of akusala, we will take what is akusala for kusala. So it's actually so many good reminders about being a nobody and the danger or the harm of mana, conceit. Being a dust rag is the opposite of flying the banner about one's own importance.
In what you just read out, Sariputta also asked for forgiveness.
Yes.
What do you think he asked for forgiveness for in that respect?
I think he was considering the other monk's citta, so he knew that if the other monk first of all apologized, and then if he accepted the apology or gave the forgiveness to Sariputta, it would be his own kusala cittas to reflect on what had happened. So I think he was thinking about the welfare of the other monk. Like if someone steps on one's toe, maybe deliberately, and they apologize, and one may say, and please forgive me for, you know, also causing trouble or being in the way. Or so it just shows one's lack of mana, and it's a kind of consideration for them. But Ajahn may have another comment.
I think it's a good example of
Abhaya. Yeah, I think also it means that when Sariputta apologized, I think he was apologizing perhaps for moments of past mana to other monks that he may have exhibited perhaps in the past to them. That's all. Because supposedly at the moment that he realized about the dust rag, he was supposed to have reached enlightenment at that moment.
Well, some people get angry at just a sight of another person, even in Arahata, they would.
Oh yeah, you know. But we're talking about the fact they asked about his apologizing.
He's apologizing for
having
being a condition by if yes. You know for yes.
Well yeah for having moments and of past for having
and
moments
even
of
at that time
transition.
By being a condition, a bit like you gave the example the other day of the arahat who jumps over puddles, maybe someone will get annoyed, so one may apologize or ask forgiveness because one's habit may be irritating to others.
Yeah, well,
so it's like
one's
not apologizing for akusala, it's just like sorry for being in your way.
Oh, you mean accidental rather than accidental mana.
Sariputta, of course, behaved perfectly, but it was, as they said, a condition for the others, akusala.
Sorry for
Danish. And I think it helps a lot, the reminder that no matter what comes one's way, no matter what anyone says or does, it only matters when we are a somebody, when we are important. But when it's a nobody like the dust rag, whatever comes, whatever criticism one hears, whatever blame it is, it just passes. Oh, there's one more that's very good about the inscription in the water. This is another sutta in Anguttara 3s. And how is an individual like an inscription in water? There is a case where a certain individual, when spoken to roughly, spoken to harshly, spoken to in an unpleasing way, is nevertheless congenial, companionable, and courteous. Just as an inscription in water immediately disappears and doesn't last a long time, in the same way a certain individual, when spoken to roughly, spoken to harshly, spoken to in an unpleasing way,
is nevertheless congenial, companionable, and courteous. This is called an individual, like an inscription in water. Then once an overseer passes, but when there's mana, one goes on and on thinking about what they said, what they did, what happened.
Like water off a duck's back.
Yes,
And I think this kind of harks back to your question yesterday, Alberto, that why the monks do this. I mean, when you reflect on Sariputta, his incredibly refined citta. And I did speak to another person last night about this matter, who was a monk before, and he said it leads to progress in the Dhamma when you're able to offer an apology like that in a sincere way. It's a display, or not so much display, I don't like that word. It's a showing of kusala in a very refined way, and it can be an exemplar to other monks also, and a support condition for all sorts of kusala dhamma.
When Buddha spoke to his son Rahula, he also reminded him to develop a mind similar to earth. And when you develop a mind similar to earth, arisen in contacts of like and dislike, don't take hold of your mind and stay. Rahula on the earth is dumped the pure and the impure, excreta, urine, saliva, pus, blood. The earth does not loathe those. In the same manner, develop a mind similar to earth. When you develop a mind similar to earth, arisen contacts of like and dislike, don't take hold of the mind and stay. So actually we find it's throughout the teachings.
So although one is not truly a dust rag until one is an arahat, there can be imitations of dust rag along the way.
Moments of dust ragness.
I'm a dust. That's right.
Well, of course, as well as thinking oneself superior, one can think of oneself as inferior. Both are mana.
Yes, it reminds me, there's a case, it's a slightly mark here, but I think this is in Charles Dickens, Uriah Heep said, "I'm ever so humble, sir."
I gave exactly that same example in the post.
Oh, well,
it's like a false humbleness.
Uriah Heep was he said, "I'm ever so humble, sir."
It's a kind of mana at that point, so it's like a false
humility. It's a false humility.
And what conditioned that moment to be humble?
If it's true, it's kusala, if it's just false humility.
This upanya, it cannot be eradicated.
Someone goes around saying, "Well, I don't mind what I drink or where I sit," or then this is the Uriah Heep, false modesty.
And what is the tone of sound at that moment?
Wanting to create a good impression or something.
Yeah. Well, it's quite common in the jhana. I often hear people say, "I'm a vegetarian," or something like that. And it's.
What about, "I'm not vegetarian"?
Yes, well, when we hear someone say, "I'm a vegetarian," "Oh, I'm not." And you want to talk about it?
Yeah. True.
Of course. There are no arahats, no dust, true dust rags, but they're reminders about the danger of conceit, the danger of clinging to oneself, and the value of not waving the banner, of being easy and considerate.
And how subtle and insidious it can be, very sneaky.
They say that's the last of the kilesa to go.
It's together with ignorance.
And lobha.
So I was going to say, also
anatta or aharika also too, because if one's still shameless at that level, even though it's very subtle, one is
shameless at that moment with regards to kusala, has no shame at that moment, and one has no, I wouldn't say fear, one has no fear at that moment of a kusala also. So it can be very, very subtle. And I like the word insidious because it means it's hidden. Literally, insidious means it hides. And very easy to think that it's perhaps skillful, but it's really not. And as the Dharma would say, panya, only panya can know that. And it does take a lot of patience and time.
When we read that it's mana, moha and lobha that are only eradicated by the arahat, it's talking about the anusiyas, the main factors, but as Sundra said, other akusala, which arises of every akusala citta, can only be eradicated then, like ahiriya and anotpa, and also udaccha.
We regret what we've done in the past, or what we haven't done in the past, or what we told, what we did, but that's already fallen away. But we don't know that. That's why I was asking, do Sotapanna still have regret, even though he knows that he's regretting what has already fallen away forever? Sotapanna does still have regret?
Still.
So what is regret?
Is akusala towards the past. Is thinking that something still exists.
So the Sotapanna does have wrong understanding, and vichikicca at all, but. Other kismicha is there.
When you say that when there's regret, we think that it hasn't fallen away, but like, for example, if there was anger last week, we know it's fallen away. There's just regret that anger arose, but there's no idea that it's still now. But usually there's the idea it was I who was angry.
And also, Ananda, when the Buddha was dying, he was weeping. He was a Sotapanna, so he had some levels of regret. There could be other jittas, obviously, too, but he was really very upset.
I mean, as Sundara brought up, I mean, a Sotapanna does not have wrong view, but still there is dosa with concepts as objects. No wrong idea about concepts being real, you know, but still it arises, there are conditions.
Sotapanna is not an arahata, not an agami, not sikatagami.
And at what stage regret is eradicated, kukucha? At what?
There's no wrong view, that is not I.
What stage of enlightenment kukucha is eradicated?
Anagami. And of course, we're all familiar with Misaka, who was very upset with the death of one of her grandchildren. And she went to see the Buddha, and the Buddha said to her, Misaka, would you like to have as many granddaughters? Would you like to have many? If I could give you many other granddaughters, would you like that? And she said, oh, yes, I would, Lord. And he said, well, tell me, Visakha, how many people die in Sawati every day? And the Buddha said, there are dozens and dozens of people who die every day. He said, well, in that case, you would want time for crying, because there would be time for crying. Because she said, sorry, she said, I would like many granddaughters like that, that just died. And he said, well, if I could give you those, would you like that? And she said, yes, of course. And he said, well, there are just hundreds of people, thousands of people potentially die in the city of Sarawak every day, so she would want time for crying.
She'd be crying all the time.
Sarah just reminded me before, I wasn't too sure, Udapcha, which is restless, the chitta which is restless, is only eradicated when you become arahatta. But so whenever there is a kusala, even when it's very, very subtle, the chitta is restless. It's udapcha, which means it's not comfortable.
Disturbed.
Not calm. That's a good way to put it. Udapcha. Where the one kukucha, as you asked about before, literally means restless. Sorry, worry. Means bad function. Kukucha, which means dysfunctional form of behaviour, which is worrying about something. And obviously it only arises with dosa.
Hoon, is there any understanding now? What is Dhamma now? What is life now?
Hearing, seeing, thinking.
What else?
Is Dhamma.
Can you make hearing not arise now?
Cannot.
Can you choose what is heard now?
Cannot.
Can hearing hear the voices in the room?
Sorry.
Can hearing hear my voice, different voices?
No, hearing can hear the sound. Yes.
And can anyone change the sound that is heard? Can anyone decide what sound is heard?
No.
So can anyone make any different reality arise now other than hearing or seeing or what is conditioned? Can you change what is arising now?
No.
So is there any point in trying to have awareness or trying to have another reality arise now?
No, cannot.
So if one focuses on feelings or breath to have more awareness, because there's so little awareness now, can it help awareness to arise?
No, cannot.
Why not?
Because it's arising by condition.
By conditions.
Yes.
Is there any eye to make awareness arise by focusing or concentrating? Can I focus or concentrate?
No.
Because concentration arises at every single moment. So at a moment of seeing, there's ekagata chetasika, focusing on the object. At a moment of hearing, there's ekagata, focusing on the object. So if there are no conditions for awareness to arise now, no one can make it arise.
Yeah.
Because each reality is anatta.
Yes.
So when one understands more about dharmas at this moment, then no thought about trying to make awareness arise or focusing on an object.
Yes.
Do you agree?
Yes. I have a question. What is accumulate?
So if there is attachment now, attachment for the green tea or attachment to the cloth, it conditions more attachment to the blue cloth or the green tea. It accumulates. It becomes habitual. It arises more and more often. And the reason we hear about the Dhamma now is because if there is understanding now, if there's a little wise reflection about hearing now as anatta, it conditions more understanding to arise in future. It accumulates. This is what is meant by accumulates. So all kusala and akusala cittas and citta seekers accumulate when they arise.
Yes. For example, I like coffee with milk. I don't like coffee with sugar because it's accumulate.
That liking, that attachment for that object is accumulating. There's memory. So when someone says, how would you like your coffee? There's memory of what Loba likes, what it's used to enjoying. So that's why it conditions more liking for that same taste, that same object. It accumulates. But maybe one day you decide you like it with sugar and no milk, because by conditions, we don't know what past accumulations will condition the liking at the next moment. We expect, we think tomorrow I will like coffee that way, but maybe it will be different, depending on different accumulations and different interest and memory of different tastes, which conditions different kinds of thinking.
The word accumulations just means adding to the heap, literally, adds to the adding to the heap, accumulus, the building up, it adds to, there's always an adding because of our
Can you say that again, louder?
So the word accumulates literally means, the word AC at the beginning there, because of Sunday, it's really an ad, AD, but you don't say accumulates, it's accumulates, it's just the way the words come together. The ad is a prefix, the ad is accumulates, so it's ad, AD, accumulates, and cumulus, we have accumulus clouds, those big, big clouds. So it's adding to something that's already big, you could say, if you like. It's just a word ultimately, but I was kind of with the Vietnamese people and they thought, what's accumulate mean? It means adding to the heap, literally, which is already there.
Accumulate is not cheetahs, not cheetahsika. Is that right?
When the kusala and the kusala, citta and citta seekers arise, for example, at a moment of citta with loba, at that moment it accumulates. It becomes more and more the habit to arise again and again. So the loba now conditions more loba to arise in future by way of accumulating. And this is what is Pakatu Upanisya Pachya, which you've heard of, natural decisive support condition. So whatever arises now can condition kusala or akusala to accumulate by this condition.
I think maybe she might be asking if accumulation is a citta or a cetasika.
So it's referring to citta and cetasikas, kusala and akusala ones, when they arise.
It's mm-hmm. a word to describe mental factors. It describes the process by which the mental factor that arrives now, it falls away, but it still has an effect because it adds to the effect of that mental factor.
Another way of saying that is that it creates conditions for it to arise again. Okay, so for instance, say mana arises. It creates conditions for mana to arise again in the future. Or the same thing with kusala and akusala, anything. When akusala actions are performed, it creates conditions for more agusala to arise later. And the same thing with gusala, more to arise later. So that's what they mean by accumulating.
And where is all that information?
Where is all that information?
The information of the accumulations is information, isn't it?
I don't know where the written is. I don't know where an exact... Sarah, do you know where an exact...
At this moment, it's all in the thinking. The thinking cheetahs. Are you saying where can you read about it? Or what at this moment, what's the reality?
Where is it stored?
The cheetah. In the cheetah, each cheetah accumulates when it arises. Nothing is forgotten, nothing is lost. Sanya marks and remembers whatever is experienced. Never gone, never lost. No store, just the cheetah itself.
Anusya, too. It's latent tendencies.
The asya, anusya.
Anusya.
So, what distinguishes the chitta and chetasikas that are vipaka and that are kusla akusla? We know that vipaka, the chitta and chetasika don't accumulate. So what's the difference and why?
Kusla and vipaka and kama.
Because
kusla and akusla are cause and vipaka is result. So when we're talking about accumulations, we're talking about cause, those which lead to the accumulation, and karma, which in future can bring results. So each moment lobha is accumulated, it leads towards karma that can bring results. But vipaka is just result. It doesn't cause anything. Same with the kriya cheetahs, accumulate, but no karma that can bring result.
Basically, that's how samsara works. Samsara.
I think that the accumulated in every citta, even patisandhi citta, so everything which has been accumulated from eons, it's all in there, although there's only a few chetasikas, because as asaya and anusaya, that passed on every chitta, every moment, just all there, nothing.
So hun is lobha accumulating now, or panya, or ignorance? What is accumulating the lobha?
So,
anything else? Any understanding accumulating today?
Not understanding seeing, hearing. When I see you, I see you, I see everybody.
So ignorance accumulating.
Yes. Love this.
Because actually, like you said, at moments of seeing just sees what is visible, hearing just hears sound, but instantly there's thinking about I see you and people and things. So this is at moments of thinking with ignorance afterwards, or thinking with wrong view afterwards, or thinking with lobha. And then at moments like now, where there is wise considering that actually, just like only sound is heard, only that which is visible is seen. So a little panya is being accumulated in between all the ignorance and attachment. So different moments, different kusala and akusala tendencies are being accumulated.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter how little understanding at all. But by hearing and considering, it is the beginning of the accumulation of understanding.
And I think this is by anantarapachaya. These accumulations happens by anantara. I think Ajahn was saying this not long ago. Is it high enough?
Every citta arises by anantarapachaya, not just kusala and akusala, also. Whatever cheetah arises, it has to have arisen by anantrapachya and no. some anantrapachya.
I think what Alberto is saying is that the process of accumulation is by force of anantrapachya.
Is by what?
By anantrapachya.
Sati.
You're saying this is the way that it, but this is the way any citta arises, not just these ones. If without anantrapachya, no citta would arise.
So we're not talking about arising at this point. We're talking about how the process of accumulation takes place, carries on from one citta to the next. And what Alberto is saying, and he can only think of right now, is that there is anantrapachya that seems to be there. And maybe something else too.
Yeah, I remember because Ajahn said this, but can you, Ajahn, confirm how accumulations are continuous from one citta to the next? What makes them, what makes asaya and anusaya possible?
I'll put it another way. Why is it never lost, the asaya and anusaya? Why is it never lost?
By conditions.
And what conditions is that?
Many different conditions, yeah. So anantra is one condition, yeah. It just refers to how one citta conditions the next one. So a moment of sense to averting consciousness conditions seeing consciousness, which conditions sampaticcana, so each one arises in succession by anantrapachya, and each one that has arisen has to be that way by some anantrapachya. So it just refers to how each citta conditions the next one, no matter we're talking about accumulations or anything else.
Is seeing accumulate?
Memory of seeing is accumulated.
Memory which arises with chakku vijnana, does it accumulate?
They were just asking about anantrapachya, so this is for.
Yes, but I'm asking about accumulation.
So, Eve, the question is for you. So at moment of seeing, Ajahn's question is whether there are any accumulations.
At the moment of seeing, seeing doesn't accumulate. Seeing is vipaka.
Kun Alberto, can you exchange your accumulations, Kun Sukina?
My accumulations too.
So,
I'll have to explain to myself first.
can you exchange your accumulations with Sukhina's accumulations?
Yeah, because I don't know the method. No, he doesn't want to.
Is it possible?
No, don't think so, no.
Impossible.
Sarah, could you, for example, about anantrapachya?
Okay. So, when each citta that arises, for example, in a sense door process, conditions the next citta in that sense door process. So now, after seeing, there must be two more vipaka cittas. So the seeing consciousness conditions the next one, and the next one, and then there's another citta, and then kusala or akusala cittas arise. Each one makes the next one happen. It's a little bit like falling dominoes. So only when this domino falls, the next one falls, so each one pushes the next one and each one falls down. So in the same way by anantrapachya, each citta arises, falls away, but conditions the next one, just like those dominoes.
Called the domino effect.
Yes. See, do you understand that?
Cannot to understand.
So
very difficult.
How many cheetahs can arise at a moment? Now, how many cheetahs can there be at a time? Can there be seeing and hearing and thinking? Can there be seeing, hearing and thinking at the same time?
No.
No. How many cheetahs at one time?
One.
And after this one cheetah, how many cheetahs at the next moment? One. So if this one cheetah doesn't fall away, can there be the next moment, the next cheetah?
No.
So this cheetah now, the seeing now, the attachment now, has to fall away, and then there are conditions for the next cheetah to arise. This is anantrapachya.
What you're explaining seems to sound like the other pachya, where it
disappearance.
Yeah.
But still, it's just explaining that this cheetah has to condition the next one. So this cheetah that arises, it falls away, but it conditions the next one to arise. That's another aspect, but it actually, still this one has to arise and fall away to condition the next one.
What does anantara mean?
Proximity.
What does it mean?
Proximity.
Proximity.
Sometimes another word they use, adjacent.
See, can't we say that that's the condition for, let's say, jettas and jetta seekers to arise together?
No.
Okay. This is the one by way each cheetah conditions the next one.
So can seeing be accumulated? Can seeing be accumulated?
Me?
Yes.
No.
Right? So what can be accumulated?
Kusala, akusala.
Vipaka.
Vipaka.
Kamma. Kamma and vipaka as well. As long as there is cause, it will bring result.
Vipaka is not accumulated, but it's conditioned.
Seeing is
vipaka.
Yes,
that is conditioned. But Ajahn said that seeing cannot be accumulated. That's right. But she said that vipaka can be
a kamma.
Kamma.
That brings result, yes.
The kamma which hasn't conditioned results yet must
kamma.
Be there. As kamma is there, there must be vipaka later. As karma is still there, there must be a vipaka conditioned by karma.
She is referring to a karma that has not yet borne fruit. It's still being accumulated. Yes. It's still passing on from one chitta to the next, and at some point it may or may not bear fruit, but it's there, the potential to bear fruit. So that's also accumulated.
And when the conditions are present, then the fruition, the vipaka.
Do you think that karma does not produce result?
Excuse me,
do you think that karma does not produce result?
Well, sometimes it does not. Not always.
Will it? Will it?
Will
the karma produce result even if it's not now, yet?
If the conditions are not suitable, then it does
not. So vipaka is where? Where is vipaka? As long as there are conditions for vipaka, it's still there to be conditioned to arise.
Right.
But you are right, because sometimes karma may not bring fruit and it becomes what's called a hosi. That's in the case of Angulimala, for example. He killed all those people, but he didn't have to, he wasn't. Because he's arahata, there would not be conditions for him to experience the fruit. He would have been born in hell. But because he's arahata...
I don't think that's the only fruit.
He could still experience very unpleasant results in that lifetime. I think it only becomes a hosi when he die and pass away.
But Achan, can we say that since the Sotapanna has only 7 lives to live, obviously there are many karmas that would become a hosi.
But the cause, like titi, is completely eradicated. So no more vipaka, which conditioned by titi anymore.
That too.
And some karma that is weaker can only bring results in the present life or the next life, so it doesn't bring results then it can't bring results later. So it just depends. Many conditions.
What is a hosaya?
Past karma.
Because
some past karma can bring results and some can't, because I think if in the Patisamadamagga, when it talks about different kinds of ahosi karma, some can bring some results and some can't. So it's
sometimes it's translated as defunct karma.
And sometimes it's spent.
Yes, it's done. Well, I think Ajahn gave a very good example just then with the case of Sotapanna, when dukkha is eradicated, then there will be Ajahn gave a very good example then.
Of course, when there is ditti, I think I know what you're going to say, Johnson, but anyway, when ditti has been eradicated, then there are not conditions to be born in dukkha anymore. So a lot of deeds will be ahosi that would have possibly brought fruit, will not bring fruit.
Actually, the word ahosi means that which has been done.
Yes.
Just that's done. And it may bring results and it may not. We can't say it's defunct that cannot bring results.
Well, one example they talk about is a certain gamma. If it doesn't bring a result in the present lifetime, then it doesn't bring a result afterwards.
That's another example too, I guess. Yeah, it's called those different stages of jhavana.
The first jhavana chitta is very weak. It's called ditta dhamma vedaniya kamma, which means that if it doesn't bring result in this life, or it's not literally seen in this life, it will not be seen again. And number 2 to number 6 are what they call can bring result at any time in samsara. And the last jhavana chitta, if it doesn't bring results in the next life, it won't bring results at all. So number 2 to 6 can potentially bring results at any time in samsara.
Going through the Patisamvada-magga about ahosi karma, and then it refers to all different kinds of past karma, those that can bring a result now and those that can't, and those that would have been able to but can't now, and those that can still bring. So it just refers to that karma that has been done. So it's actually a common misunderstanding that it refers to defunct karma, because there are different kinds of past karma which are ahosi.
I can see how people have mistranslated that, because it is the past part, the past tense of the verb to be.
That which is done.
Or completed.
Yeah. Completed or done. I can see how people can have this idea of defunct, but I can see how that can be potentially misunderstood too.
Can you see how it led to the average Thai people's conclusion that it means forgiveness?
To pardon, yeah. In Thai, regular language means to pardon, right?
To pardon.
Doesn't leave a house in the direction. ธรรมดาอโหสิแปลว่า pardon forgive ใช่ไหมครับ
That's not correct.
That's just the
as in I a hosi you.
I give you a hosi.
I give you a hosi.
Yeah, I give you a pardon.
Because I thought the time was a bayadana. It's forgiveness.
Another word for karma is a hosi karma because altogether 12 karmas.
I'm not sure what you mean by karma. What are the 12 food you're referring to?
The karma that has been done will bring result later, we don't know when.
Yes.
But that which has been eradicated, like ditti,
yes.
The karma which conditioned by ditti, yes. Also has no condition to arise.
No.
Like here it's referring to four kinds of ahosi karma. And I think this is in the Abhidhammata Sangaha. And it has the Pali, and it refers to them as with respect to the time of taking effect, four kinds: immediately effective, subsequently effective, indefinitely effective, and defunct. So that's just one of the four kinds. And in the Patisamvada Magga, it has 12 kinds in more detail. So the kind which cannot bring result is just one of those kinds. So it just means that which is done past karma.
In Vietnam, we have many friends follow the Ahosi practice in Thailand.
That practice comes from Vietnam or from Thailand or where, do you know?
I heard that it's come from Thailand.
Thailand.
Yes.
And I thought that Burma and Burmese, the origin is
Burma.
Yeah. There's a meditation center which used the term Ahosi all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Here.
Yeah.
And Vietnam thought that it took from Thailand.
Yes.
and all the friends come to Thailand and practice Ahosi, Ahosi Center.
And what is it they do?
I'm not sure. They just forgive.
From what I gather, they forgive themselves too.
So we can see that no understanding leads to so many different practices, or even if one's heard and considered, but one would like some, one's so desperate for kusala or to get rid of past karma or for clinging for self, so it leads to many practices.
So, Chan, those who are reciting the Ahosi, they will receive the fruits of karma condition by wrong understanding.
No panya at all.
If you haven't been for a little while, and do you have any points or any topics you would like to bring up?
While I've been away, I've been reading from Survey of Paramatta Dhammas about the variegated nature of cheetahs. And then there was that trick question on page 156, number 6, which cheetah is without jati, but I think it must have, perhaps in the printing, another word rather than cheetah, because cheetah are either kusla vipak, or kirya. So, but just appreciation there, appreciation for today's discussion.
And we were talking earlier about how, like you said, we all have different accumulations and we cannot exchange accumulations. And sometimes our accumulations make it difficult to hear the Dhamma because we may be disturbed or distracted or put off by something by different accumulations. So this is why I think it takes a lot of such a parami to be truthful, no matter what the accumulations are, no matter how difficult life is, however disturbed we are.
And at a point in the discussion, when stating wrongness begins with wrong view, and then that was another
person or someone said something about hetus, lest there be confusion, because there's not enough accumulations of panya to differentiate. So we're sort of, you know, stepping away for a bit, because I don't want to have confusion added on top of every, yeah.
And it is very, in the beginning, like I was talking to Huan, it is very difficult, the development of understanding, and the teaching is very subtle, and we come here and there may be many terms and words we don't understand, or like for Huan, it's in a language that is very difficult for her to follow. So that's why, as Ajahn says, it's good to talk about one word at a time. So do you understand what hetu is?
Yes, root. So, yes, if there's emphasis when, you know, countering that the truth is that wrongness begins with wrong view, ditti, and if there's emphasis on no, it's hetu or something else, then I don't insist. I just sort of, you know, step back, kind of a thing.
So one can see one's accumulations at that very moment. So however we behave, or yes. Yes. Do you have any comment for, as I mentioned with Eve and with other people, we have different accumulations, and for some people it's, for everyone it's very difficult to listen, and sometimes we may be put off by other people or disturbed by this or that. But still, when there's enough confidence in Dharma, the understanding continues. Do you have any encouraging words to say about this?
Or Adamas?
So, Ajahn, you're saying that if we understand that all Adamas become more firm, then there's less problems with people and things,
can
and situations.
Can you change the other's accumulation?
No. But anyone,
but try your best.
Anyone is the only way to solve all problems is to understand that all are dhammas.
To be understanding person.
Yes, when there's more understanding about accumulations and how, like, for us the lobha that arises now couldn't be any other way, and if there's anger here it has to be like this. It's the same for everyone. Whatever arises, it's by condition. So more understanding leads to being more accepting, more understanding of people as just as they are, because it cannot be any other way at that time. More metta,
and less dwelling on
thinking about me, yes. I was chatting to Metta about this, about when we have difficulties or losses and we think a lot about ourselves and our loss, but when we're helping others and reflecting on Dharma, we forget about ourselves and life is easier at those times.
Ajahn, please elaborate more about the understand ourselves accumulation.
Again, more. I think that everything is said by the Buddha himself. That's why just reading, considering, and understanding.
Do you agree that if we get angry now, for example, it makes us more likely to be angry again in future or not? Does that make any sense? Or do you think that it has no consequence?
Some would say, all right, it doesn't matter.
At the moment of understanding, so it's all right, doesn't matter. But if no understanding, it still happen again and again.
So what can we do?
Cannot do anything.
The fact that it happens again and again, that's what is meant by accumulation. But it doesn't get weaker as time goes on, it gets stronger.
Yeah.
It's not as though you're using up the store of anger, it's accumulating. Was that your question, or are you asking about the mechanism?
Mechanism.
A mechanism.
Well, that's the mechanism, what you're talking about.
Yeah, there is no explanation of the mechanism. But experience in life tells us that that is the way it happens. So Is there any need to know the mechanism?
But the mechanism is the power of habit, isn't it? That's the mechanism.
The power of
habit. Yes. That's the mechanism of accumulation. Yeah. The power of habit. No, that's the mechanism, I think. That's why.
Not sure about that one.
If I get anger now, I reinforce my habit for anger.
I think it's the other way around. That explains what habit is. The mechanism that the dosa now accumulates explains what habit is.
It's an example of this kind of anger building upon other anger is now in the United States. We have the Democratic Party. It's a valid example. They get angrier and angrier at Trump, and then they make more and more crazy accusations.
That's just different accumulation speaking.
The accumulation of anger.
So whether we come here or stay away, however we speak, whatever the interest, each moment, each citta is conditioned, and it can't be any other way, but understanding can develop any time, any place.
Why is the mechanism important? Does it involve some kind of technique for stopping the accumulation?
Yes.
We think if we know the mechanism, we can reduce the cumulative effect, right? No point in thinking like that.
Who thinks that if you are aware of certain the thing, then what you can control what follows.
If you're aware of what?
I forget exactly, but he teaches to the effect that if you're sitting and being aware at doing when there's citta rising and following each other, at some point if you know that moment, then you can determine, make a change as to what follows. Like instead of a kusla can follow.
Han, what is the practice you're referring to?
No, it's not really the practice. Just I understand that idea of saying I want to stop what the akusala dhamma to arise.
I thought you were saying there's some people who believe that there's a way of interrupting the cumulative effect. Is that right? No. Okay.
It does remind me, and I think Khunsu Kin reminded me, I think there are some meditation teachers who teach the belief, or who teach that because in paticca samuppada, that vedana paccaya tanha, that you can somehow you can stop after vedana somehow, and then that's not helpful.
Just before
they call it breaking the chain or the cycle.
Just before the discussion and Sarah, just yesterday I had a talk with one of my friends. They were talking about Hong Kong situation and all that, and I said, if you ask Sarah, Sarah would just say that there is seeing, smelling, tasting, there's no different. Whether in Hong Kong what's happening now or what happened in Thailand or even in the States. So I was impressed with that. Can you say a bit more about that, please?
Everyone asks us about this, but at this moment, if there's no thinking about Hong Kong, there's no problem at all, like during this time, no thinking. So moment of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, no problem. So it's all the disturbances in the thinking.
Yeah. Well, she said, my friend said, well, Sarah is well loved. She was not in the area, or she was
just right in the middle of the area. It all out of our window, and one day I was walking back right through the middle, but it's still just seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking. Yes, moments of hardness, moments of seeing visible object, and then thinking long stories about the people and this and that. But it's just the disturbance is all in the thinking with lobha, dosa, moha.
So honestly, there is no
any time at all that is affected you and make you thinking, you know, akusala in kusala in akusala way?
Of course, because thinking is usually with akusala citta. So like everyone else, like one time when I'm looking out of the window and I was afraid people were going to get hurt or injured, but it's still the disturbance is in the thinking at that moment, the thinking with worry, the thinking with fear, thinking with attachment. But there can be moments of wise consideration and understanding in between.
One thing for sure, Sarah is not a nanagami yet.
No, even for us, we, you know, whatever happened in Thailand or anywhere, I think it's, you know, similar situation. So the seeing, smelling, like you said, you know, to be known.
Everywhere there are problems because of wrong view. Everywhere.
Yes,
and
that's right,
people think if like this, they will get some good results. They don't understand about karma and conditions. But we're so fortunate to have heard the Dharma and to know what the real problems in life are. The problems are not the government and the society and the other people and what he said and what she did.
Yes.
The problem is just the thinking now with ignorance and attachment.
Without the Dhamma, you have one big problem. I have one big problem. Everyone has a big problem. In the end, it's just Nama and Rupa.
The reason that the Arahat has no problems at all is not because they're not living in Hong Kong or not because they don't see children around. The reason they have no problem is because no kilesa.
And we all tend to think our problem is more than
others. That's right.
Because of being preoccupied with me and myself.
Thank you for that question. I think Ajahn must be
so now everyone knows where's the problem.
Yes.
It's so easy to project our problems onto others or the government, as Sarah said, and it's really not about them at all. We forget about that so easily. And I'm just reminded, it's in Ajahn's book, it's very brief, about when the Buddha was said to the monks, just as if monks, a man in this Jeta Grove were to gather and burn and do what he likes with the sticks and the branches and the trees or the twigs, would you think that he was gathering and burning you? And they said, no, Lord, we would not think that he was doing that to us. Just so, monks, in the same way, that just like he's not gathering and burning you, as you said, you should regard what that which is seen, rupa, as that. It's not something to be clung on to, that regarded as what that fellow does. We so easily take it for self. I haven't explained that very well, I've realised. But we so easily forget that we take rupa for something. And it's not something the Buddha was encouraging us to remember. And it's not us. You know, what we think is us like now, and the Dhamma is now. We so easily forget that it's something that needs to be applied always to the present moment. It's not in the books. It's not out there. It's to be applied at every moment.
This is the value of being with good friends and having good reminders, so we appreciate it very much.